My name is Sergeant Rick Schiff. I'm an 11-year veteran of the San Francisco Police Department. I hold the department's highest medal of honor for bravery. That used to mean a lot more to me than it does now. What I'd like to talk to you about today is my now 7-year-old daughter. This is an identical twin. Her sister is now dead. Her sister, when she was 4 years old, Kristen, developed a highly malignant brain tumor that had spread throughout her spine and her brain. The doctors told us that we had really two options: take her home, let her die, or bring her in for massive dosages of chemo and radiation simultaneously. In either event, she was going to die. They were quite certain of that, and very quickly. Believing her only chance to be the standard route, we gave her the chemo and radiation. It burned her skull so bad she had second-degree burns and her hair never came back. To change her diapers, we had to wear rubber gloves because her urine was so toxic and it burned her. At the end of 6 months, miraculously, she survived the standard treatment, although there was a high expectation she wouldn't. She still had cancer. We were told, sorry, we've done everything we can. Now she's going to die, probably within a couple of months. My wife and I, choosing not to accept that, started reading. The first book I picked up, the third chapter, discussed Dr. Brzezinski. As you may guess, I have some expertise in fraud. In fact, I'm quite certain there are enough attorneys in the room that I could be voir dired as an expert in fraud. And I conducted my own investigation. I have no doubt the man is not a fraud. I have no doubt that he does what he does out of earnest belief that his medicine works. And now you're in a position to judge for yourselves whether it works or not, but it's well established by the FDA that it's non-toxic. 18 months later, we took my daughter off the antineoplastin. She had not died. She had no signs of tumor. She remained free for 18 months of cancer. Within a month, the cancer was widespread in her brain. We put her back on Brzezinski's. By the way, at the objections of our doctors, for some reason felt that it had failed her. We put her back on. Within 9 weeks, the tumor was completely gone. She died last July of neurological necrosis. Her brain fell apart from the radiation. The autopsy showed that she was completely cancer-free. Out of 52 cases of that disease ever, no one died cancer-free, just Chrissy. So she didn't die of a terminal illness. She died of my inability to care for her properly, and she died from bad advice. She died because there's a government institution that disseminates false information and is not looking out for the welfare of the people. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I swore an oath 11 years ago, and I think most of us in this room swore it at one time or another, to uphold the Constitution. It says life right in the beginning.
I first heard of Dr. Brzezinski back in the late 1980s when he was in a battle with the Texas Medical Board and the FDA regarding his innovative approach to cancer. I wasn't surprised by that. Anyone who's innovative in medicine creates waves in the medical system. However, in his case, I was continually surprised that they didn't put him out of business. I kept hearing about him. So in the mid-1990s, I said, Dr. Brzezinski, I want to come down to visit your clinic and find out what you're doing. It's very new to me. When I arrived, he had 7 charts ready for me to review that had been reviewed by the National Cancer Institute, who also made a site visit the year before. The National Cancer Institute reported that these 7 patients were either in complete remission or there was substantial improvement. I was astounded. Dr. Brzezinski had MRIs of brain tumors known to be almost universally fatal that had simply disappeared. It was obvious to me that Dr. Brzezinski had made the most important discovery in cancer treatment ever. It's what we have been looking for.
A Polish native named Stanisław Brzezinski attended Lublin Medical University, where he graduated first in his class at age 24, and then received his PhD in biochemistry the following year. While undergoing his research to acquire his PhD, Dr. Brzezinski made a profound discovery. He found a strain of peptides in human blood and urine that had never before been recorded in biomedical research. As his curiosity in these peptides evolved, he made another profound observation. People who were inflicted with cancer seemed to lack these newly discovered peptides in both their blood and urine, while those who were healthy and free of cancer appeared to have an abundance of these peptides. Dr. Brzezinski theorized that if he could somehow provide a way to chemically extract these peptides from the blood and urine of healthy donors and administer these peptides to those with cancer, perhaps it could be useful in treating the disease.
Now, discovering something in the urine at that time that had not been discovered before is like finding a whole bunch of islands 10 miles off the coast of Miami. It came as a big surprise. All of a sudden, he was besmirched as the urine doctor. We forget that extracting things from the urine is an established medical modality. Tens of millions of women have been swallowing extracts of horse urine, Premarin, for decades. But all of a sudden, it was abhorrent to our sensitivities. Well, Dr. Brzezinski now synthesizes all of the antineoplastones.
Dr. Brzezinski's manufacturing facility in Stafford, Texas, where his antineoplastones are now synthesized, is a multi-million dollar, 46,000 square foot facility which staffs 5 engineers, 4 chemists, 3 pharmacists, 4 medical doctors, and 4 researchers.
Well, we started in 1970s, now is forming completely new approach to cancer treatment, which is called gene-targeted therapy. Antineoplastones are medicines which work on the genes which are causing cancer. And now there's 25 medications which belong to the family of gene-targeted therapy, which are approved by FDA in the United States. The problem with these medicines is that they don't cover as many genes as antineoplastones. Many of them simply work on single genes, and this is not enough to have long-term responses. Single medicine is not going to do it. It's not enough. Antineoplastones work on close to 100 different genes.
Our bodies contain 2 categories of genes that allow cancer to flourish: oncogenes and tumor suppressor genes. When someone has cancer, they have a higher level of oncogenes switched on, with a higher level of tumor suppressor genes switched off. The goal is to tell the body to both switch back on the tumor suppressor genes and turn off as many oncogenes as possible.
Statistically, every day, 1 out of 10,000 cells in our body may develop in the wrong way, and some of these cells may become cancerous cells. But why we don't develop cancer, all of us, is because we have protective system, we have antineoplastones who will immediately force these malignant cells to die by working on the genes, by turning on genes which fight cancer, turning off the genes which promote cancer. As long as we have proper amount of antineoplastones in our system, we should not develop cancer. If we are deficient, then we can develop cancer. So this means that I put together a theory of the second quote-unquote immune system in our body.
Today, Dr. Brzezinski is permitted by the FDA to treat cancer patients using antineoplastones in FDA-approved clinical trials. Since brain cancer is one of the most difficult types of cancer to treat, he places a heavy focus on brain cancer in his clinical trials.
On May 15th of 2000, I was diagnosed with an inoperable stage 3 anaplastic astrocytoma brain tumor. Following my diagnosis, I was told that I had 6 to 18 months to live. So I met with oncologists here in Los Angeles and in San Francisco, and they were telling me at that time, the oncologist told me that the protocol for me would be to do Temodar, which is a chemotherapy, followed by a course of radiation. I asked them what that treatment would get me, and they said, maybe 5 years. Maybe 5 years of life. So, of course, I asked what would happen after 5 years, if I get to that 5 years, and they said, well, we'll see what's available at that time, meaning I would perpetually be on a course of treatment. Didn't sound good enough for me. Also at that time, I'd heard about Dr. Brzezinski in Houston, and I found out about Dr. Brzezinski through a friend of mine, but you know, I met with a prominent neurosurgeon here who wrote off Dr. Brzezinski. And he told me point blank that antineoplastones don't work. Dr. Brzezinski's treatment really sounded right to me. So I started on his treatment on June 6th of 2000. In December of 2000, all that was left of the tumor was scar tissue. And again, this was confirmed through an MRI. In October of 2001, I stopped antineoplastin therapy altogether. I've had annual MRIs since that time, so over the course of the last 8 years, annual MRIs have confirmed all that's left of the tumor is scar tissue, and I've been off treatment for that entire time. So Dr. Brzezinski cured me of a brain tumor.
If we review Jody Fenton's medical records, who was known at this time as Jody Gold before she was married in 2005, it shows she underwent an MRI at St. John's Medical Center in Los Angeles on May 11th of 2000, where they found a 2-centimeter mass, which they suspected was cancer. The pathology department at St. John's performed a biopsy 4 days later and confirmed that she did indeed have a malignant brain tumor. Ordinarily, the FDA requires that anyone who wishes to be a part of Dr. Brzezinski's trials must first have already undergone chemotherapy and radiation and failed. However, since Jody's tumor was so aggressive and her prognosis severely grim, she managed to get special exception status to be placed into this trial without undergoing any other prior treatment whatsoever. An MRI on June 1st of 2000 revealed the size of the enhancing portion of Jody's tumor, which was the part of her tumor that was the most aggressively growing. On June 6th, she started antineoplastin treatment, and by July 3rd, only a month after starting treatment, the enhancing portion of her tumor was gone. Her tumor remained non-existent up until September of the following year, when she stopped her antineoplastin treatment altogether. It's one thing to be shown a single anecdotal case with this type of brain tumor, and it's another to simply compare clinical trial data of inoperable anaplastic astrocytoma patients treated with toxic radiation and chemotherapy versus clinical trial data using only Dr. Brzezinski's non-toxic antineoplastin therapy. A 2005 clinical trial report using only radiation and chemotherapy found that 5 of 54 patients, or 9%, were cancer-free at the end of treatment, while a 2008 clinical trial report using only antineoplastins found that 5 of 20 patients, or 25%, were cancer-free at the end of treatment, with no toxic side effects. Jody Fenton is one of them.
If Jody Fenton had undergone the therapies originally prescribed to her, her life would have been very different. Now she is alive, well, and prospering. It's as if she had a bacterial infection and Dr. Brzezinski treated it with antibiotics.
4 years after my diagnosis, I had run into one of the neuro-oncologists that I met with and told him that I had gone to Dr. Brzezinski and I was cured, and he kind of wrote it off. I was very excited to tell him that I was cured, and he really burst my bubble about it, so it was somewhat depressing for me. Another doctor that I have, when I told him I had anaplastic astrocytoma, he was very excited. He's like, bleep, 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 you know, I can't believe this is you, because do you know what the prognosis for this is? And I said, yes. He's like, I can't believe you survived this, and he was very excited for me.
Now, if you're ever going to go into cancer treatment, you do not want to go into childhood brain tumors, because childhood brain tumors, by and large, are 100% fatal. This would be the worst class of cancers to treat. But he began getting enormous success.
Arguably, the worst type of cancer is inoperable brainstem glioma. Usually, it involves brain of children, and unfortunately, there's very little that can be done. Radiation is the only treatment which can be used to slow down the progress. So that's the type of tumor for which there's no curative treatment, no chemotherapy which is approved. And numerous clinical trials were performed but failed in the past. So we selected this type of tumor because we would like to prove the point beyond any doubt that this type of cancer can be cured by the use of antineoplastins. And we already have proof that it can be cured.
She was diagnosed in March of 96. She was 11. and pretty much just started having really bad double vision is how we discovered it. Went to the eye doctor, and that's when they did the MRI and discovered it was a brainstem glioma. And they explained that hers was diffuse, where it was like the healthy tissue and the cancerous tissue were swirled together. So, of course, surgery wasn't an option. And with the radiation, they suggested her prognosis was probably going to be about 8 to 18 months.
The thing is, with the radiation, what it would do to you, from what I understood, was they would shoot the beam through your ears, and the beam would burn your healthy and your cancerous cells inside or outside in. So all your hair around your ears would be gone, never grow back. Your ears would become deformed and burnt. You would become deaf because you couldn't hear. It would also destroy your pituitary gland, which is the gland that helps you grow as you hit puberty.
Yeah, she was 11 at the time, and that was a real concern I had.
And it'd make you stay in an 11-year-old body.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, in the end, you'd become in a vegetated state where you couldn't take care of yourself, which wasn't a very good quality of life.
Because my big concern was with the oncologist originally that we were dealing with was, you know, how it was going to affect her development and when she started to enter the teenage years, starting a period and growing and developing. And he just looked at me and he said, well, frankly, Mrs. Russell, she's not going to live that long.
What she would have to go through in those extra months, that would be horrible. I wouldn't want to go through it. Why do it?
You're handed the death sentence anyway. So what was the point of the radiation?
You know, you have to say, okay, modern medicine doesn't have an answer. Let's find our own.
Jessica Russell's brainstem glioma was confirmed by an MRI in Springfield, Missouri, and the Children's Hospital of St. Louis, Missouri.
Jessie Russell is writing on the best news she's had since March. She and her parents now believe they are on their way to a cure for what doctors had said was an incurable brain tumor. Here at the Brzezinski Clinic in Houston, Texas, the Russells have found an experimental drug they could only dream of 8 months ago. That's when Jessie was still a fifth grader at a Catholic elementary school in Springfield. It's when one of her eyes started crossing in. She started seeing double. It's when Jessie went to the doctor and learned she had one of the most aggressive kinds of brain cancer, a malignant tumor doctors said would kill her within months, and that radiation would only give her a little more time.
And I would live for only 3 months and, like, live in, like, pain, and that's it, and not, like, a fun life. Yeah, I would still die.
Today, the medical pictures tell a different story. You can see the improvement immediately just looking at Jessie's eyes now compared to last May.
An MRI on May 7th of 1996 revealed the size of the enhancing portion of Jessica's tumor. 1 month into starting antineoplaston treatment, her tumor disappeared. However, given the aggressive nature of this type of tumor, it quickly returned in August and remained until November, in which time Dr. Brzezinski doubled her antineoplaston dosage until her tumor went away in December, only to return again in January of 1997, stayed around until April, and finally disappeared in May of 1997, 1 year after starting antineoplaston treatment. Jessica's tumor remained non-existent up until October 2001, when her brainstem glioma was considered resolved.
There were very few doctors that you would tell them you were seeing Brzezinski that would be kind of encouraging and positive with you. Most of them, they would hear the name Brzezinski and they wouldn't want to deal with you because they were afraid. I'm so relieved that we found Dr. Brzezinski. Literally, it did save her life. And here she is now 24, and she's got a little boy who's almost 5, and then she has her second baby will be born in October. We just found out she's having a little girl.
Again, it's one thing to observe a single anecdotal childhood brainstem glioma survivor, and it's another to see the results from FDA-supervised clinical trials treating Jessica's type of cancer. Here is a table illustrating studies published in 2006 comparing the results of different childhood brainstem glioma treatments. There were three groups treated with radiation and chemotherapy, and two groups treated with Dr. Brzezinski's antineoplastons. Out of all three groups treated with radiation and chemotherapy, only one of 107 patients, or 0.9%, were cancer-free after treatment. However, this patient did not live beyond 5 years, presumably being devastated by the amount of radiation and chemotherapy. Out of both groups treated with antineoplastons, 11 of the 40 patients, or 27.5%, were cancer-free after treatment. And 11 of the 40 patients, or 27.5%, lived more than 5 years. Most of these brainstem glioma survivors who were not previously subjected to toxic chemotherapy and radiation before starting antineoplaston treatment have gone on to enjoy full, healthy lives.
So the good news is that the cancer can be cured. The worst type of cancer can be cured. For good. The people who are surviving, they live normal life. No side effects from the treatment. No symptoms, no sign of tumors, back to life. We studied some of them as children, and they have their own three children. There is no impairment of fertility. They just live normal life. The bad thing, however, is that we know that we can help not everybody, but some of these patients. Well, if about 30% of patients can survive over 5 years, and a number of them live over 10 years without any sign of cancer, that's a good thing. But obviously, this is just the beginning. We need to perfect this. We need to introduce the newer generation of antineoplastons, which we call second and the third generation of antineoplastons, to make the treatment more effective, to cover a broad spectrum, and to be easier to administer.
They came back. They said she has this large baseball-sized tumor in her abdomen. And not only that, but it's in her kidney. It was like everywhere. It was like
and her the liver and
liver,
her lungs.
Her kidney and her lungs. So here we are thinking basically this child has literally a few months to live is basically what they told us. At that point they said, well, we think we can get the original tumor out. So they had this surgeon. He was able to go in. He got the whole tumor. She did lose her left kidney and her left adrenal gland. And it was four drugs. And it was like 8 pages of side effects and very little hope that it would even work. So, because the drugs were minotane. Doxorubicin. Etoposide. Cisplatin. And they told us, admittedly, this is the most toxic regimen that we have. We have a 6-month-old with one kidney, and the side effects were like kidney failure, hearing effect, leukemia, I mean, other kinds of cancers coming from this. And I was just like, even if she's going to pass away, I can't do this to her. I can't, because it's like, why would I want her last few months of life to be miserable?
I didn't know what to do. I just knew that I didn't want to put her through all that intense high-dose chemo and miss out on what might be the last bit of time that we have with her, because I had talked to my uncle. He's in his 60s now, but when in 1969, my cousin, his daughter, was like three, and she got cancer of some kind. And he told me about what that was like in that time, and they just kept giving her more chemo and more chemo and more chemo. And then finally, we had this long, several-hour conversation one day, and he told me, I asked him, because I prepared myself, was trying to prepare myself, I said, what is it like when a doctor tells you, that's it, I can't do anymore? And my uncle Ray told me that for the last few weeks of my cousin's life, they celebrated Christmas once a week.
Well, they had
a Christmas and a birthday once a week until I was it. And I was putting myself in his shoes, and I was thinking, I was just thinking that I couldn't watch my daughter wither away, and that if I wanted to be, at least I wanted whatever time I had to be happy as could be anyway, and not, I don't know, not just watch her wither away from chemo that's not doing any good anymore.
We had actually asked the endocrinologist at MD Anderson about Dr. Brzezinski, and he told us he was a quack and that there was no evidence that worked. But at that point, it was like, well, yours doesn't really work either.
The other thing that I did on the FDA's website, you can look up the date at which any drug was granted FDA approval, and I realized that the oldest drug they wanted to give her had come out in the early 70s. The newest drug that they wanted to give Kelsey came out around 1988. And I realized this isn't the cutting edge of technology. This is, they're giving us the same old stuff. I just thought, well, this is ridiculous. It felt to me like they were grasping at straws. I was doing all that research, and Sarah and Susan found the Brzezinski Clinic. You know, Sarah said, well, I want to take her there. You know, I looked at it like, well, you know, if she's got approximately 9 months to live, then, you know, we come over here and we don't have all the side effects. Well, you know, in 9 months' time, which am I going to be better off doing?
Right.
If the ending result is the same.
Upon the removal of Kelsey's left kidney and left adrenal gland, her diagnosis was confirmed at the University of Texas Medical Branch, and again at MD Anderson Cancer Center. Where, a month later, MD Anderson also confirmed that Kelsey's cancer had spread to her lungs. After desperately researching Kelsey's situation, her family decided to decline all chemotherapy treatments offered by MD Anderson and instead enroll Kelsey into one of Dr. Brzezinski's clinical trials. By this time, Kelsey's cancer had also spread into her liver. After starting her antineoplaston treatment, the tumor in Kelsey's liver was gone by August of 2007. CT scans of her chest revealed 6 tumors in her lungs at the start of treatment. One by one, the tumors in Kelsey's lungs began to go away. Leaving one small spot, 4 years later, which was deemed to be inactive and most likely scar tissue. Today, Kelsey Hill is considered to have had a complete response to her antineoplaston treatment. Since Dr. Brzezinski began treating cancer patients with antineoplastons, he has successfully treated virtually every type of cancer, relieving thousands of families from across the world of this dread disease. Yet, unlike other clinical trials which are supported by billion-dollar pharmaceutical companies and are often assisted by large tax-funded research grants from the National Cancer Institute, the United States government currently prohibits any taxpayer money to be granted to Dr. Brzezinski's FDA-approved clinical trials.
A single phase 3 trial will cost about $25 million. So how many can you run, okay? You may run few at best. Nobody's giving you money for that. We have to make money for that, okay? And it's $25 million, okay? Some other financial companies will come with the idea, they go to the National Cancer Institute and they will receive handsome grant, $15 million, whatever, okay? And they do clinical trials. Nobody's giving me any money, okay? And I'm working like in the wartime condition, okay? Like working somewhere in the Gaza Strip or West Bank, okay? When the bombs are falling on you, but you still have to treat patients, you still have to do phase two clinical trials.
Given the existence of a treatment that is curing cancer at a rate that traditional medicine could only dream of, and doing so without any damaging side effects, most would assume that every penny of our tax dollars allocated for cancer research would be thrown in Dr. Brzezinski's direction.
The problem that we face, however, is that a huge financial house has been built on the paradigm of purging the body of cancer cells. Brzezinski's discovery means that the foundation, the walls, and the roof of that house need to be replaced. Think about it. You know, you've got thousands of doctors in oncology and in oncology residency programs. You've got the pharmaceutical industry pumping out chemotherapeutic agents every month. There are all kinds of machines that deliver radiation. You got all this stuff in the war on cancer, and it's trillions of dollars. I find it very interesting that we have all these walks for the cure of cancer. You got all the wristbands. You got all the donations. We're going to find a cure this decade. All this money keeps pouring in, and it all goes to the same guys.
The pharmaceutical industry is arguably the most profitable industry on our planet, with its profits being triple that of all of the Fortune 500 companies. Rising profits result in rising stock prices. The only way this industry can sustain this profitable momentum is by continuing to introduce new patented drugs. And since the pharmaceutical industry relies on the FDA as its gatekeeper to introduce these new drugs, it's in their best interest to ensure the FDA remains as compliant as possible. And since the FDA is also an office of the United States government, it's in the government's best interest to preserve one of its most powerful industries. The former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, Dr. Marcia Angel, has been very outspoken with the idea that it's time to take the Food and Drug Administration back from the drug companies. In 1992, Congress put the fox in the chicken coop. It passed the Prescription Drug User Fee Act, which authorizes drug companies to pay user fees to the FDA for each brand name drug considered for approval. The User Fee Act put the FDA on the payroll of the industry it regulates, and it has drastically changed the way it operates. The part of the agency that reviews new drugs now gets more than half of its money from the pharmaceutical industry. The FDA's coziness with industry is underscored by the composition of its 18 advisory committees, outside experts who help evaluate drugs. Incredibly, many of these advisors work as consultants for drug companies. The FDA behaves as though the pharmaceutical industry is its user, not the public. In 2010, the fee revenue paid by the pharmaceutical industry to the FDA has risen to over $500 million annually. Pharma now pays over $1.4 million per application for most cancer drugs submitted to the FDA to ensure a timely approval. It's important to understand that neither Congress or the FDA had requested this new fee structure to occur. Instead, pharma itself went to Congress and imposed these new fees onto the FDA, in essence, purchasing the FDA's drug evaluation department from both the government and the public. In a 2007 health policy report sponsored by Pfizer, supporting the renewal of these user fees, they revealed that the median review time for priority drugs, those for serious life-threatening diseases that lack satisfactory treatments, such as cancer, was sped up from 21 months in 1993 to 6 months in 2004. Dozens of cancer therapies have been reviewed and approved within 3 or 4 months. Meanwhile, Dr. Brzezinski, his patients, and other supporting scientists have made every conceivable effort to get the FDA, and thus the government, to cooperate in the research, review, and approval of anti-neoplastons since 1977.
Thank you.